I am Valentin Fuster for Jack, issue of January the 28th of 2020. The second Jack Review topic of the week is entitled Embolic Stroke of Undetermined Source. This excellent up-to-date review on embolic stroke of undetermined source, or ISUS, was done by Dr. George Ignatius from the Department of Internal Medicine, Faculty of Medicine, School of Health Sciences at the University of Thessaly in Larissa, Greece. After an introduction and a general summary, I will address four different sections. Section number one, definition and epidemiology. Section number two, atrial fibrillation in ISUS and other potential embolic sources. Section number three, two trials, the Navigate ISUS trial and the Respect ISUS trial. And finally, section number four, directions of ongoing and future research on ISUS. Let me begin with an introduction and general summary, a capsule report of the four sections. First, about definition and epidemiology. The term embolic stroke of undetermined source, or ISUS, was introduced in 2014 to describe patients with a non-lacunar ischemic stroke and no convincing etiology. This is somewhat different than cryptogenic stroke, which is close to meaning an incomplete diagnostic workup before the final determination of ISUS. ISUS involves approximately 17% of all ischemic stroke patients who are typically young with mild strokes and a stroke recurrence of about 4 to 5% per year. What about the etiology? Although over the years, atrial fibrillation has been considered as one of the possible etiologies, as we will describe in more detail, this is not necessarily the case, with six other etiologies, perhaps in combination, should also be considered. These are, first, atrial cardiopathy. Second, left ventricular disease. Third, atherosclerotic plaques. Fourth, valvular heart disease. Fifth, patent foramen ovale. And sixth, cancer. All such etiologies will be described in more detail in few minutes. Third, what about the Navigate ISUS and the Respect ISUS trials? Why they are important within the context of embolic stroke of undetermined source? Once the patients were appropriately diagnosed as ISUS, the Navigate ISUS compare rivaroxaban with aspirin, while the Respect ISUS compare dabigatran with aspirin. About ischemic strokes, no difference in the four groups. About mesial bleeding, no difference between the dabigatran and the rivaroxaban groups. But for some reason, the incidence was significantly higher only in the aspirin group of the Respect ISUS study, the one that was compared with aspirin with dabigatran. How to understand such complexities? Just wait for a few minutes. And finally, as part of this summary, what about directions of ongoing and future research on ISUS? The reality is that at the present time, we do not know how to treat this syndrome from the antithrombotic point of view. Three studies are under consideration. First, a highly powered COMPASS trial. That is, compare the combination of rivaroxaban and aspirin with aspirin alone. The objective being to prevent stroke recurrence in patients with aortic arch, cervical, or intracranial atherosclerosis. Second, the axiomatic study. With the use of the new oral factor 11 inhibitors, as compared with antiplatelet treatment, again for stroke prevention in patients with atherosclerotic disease. And finally, the Arcadia trial, focused in oral anticoagulation of patients with atrial cardiopathy or left ventricular disease. Aside of these three potential trials and other observational approaches, it seems that two concepts should be approached. The first concept is, within each etiology of the seven that we mentioned, just to clarify when a red thrombus takes place with predominance of fibrin, such as in the stasis phenomena of left ventricular dilatation or atrial cardiopathy, versus when the clot or the thrombus is a white thrombus, platelet dependent, as it may happen in atherosclerotic disease processes. And in addition, although not specified in this excellent review, our feeling and the feeling of many others is that in a good proportion of patients with issues, the process is calcium emboli, with no antithrombotic therapy being of help. So the first concept is to determine these three possibilities according to different etiologies. And here's the second concept. Which strokes are indeed undetermined, and which diagnostic workup is indeed proper? In terms of the first question, it seems that a stroke on a young individual under the age of 60 who has a PFO should probably be excluded from the syndrome, since such etiology is not infrequently the source of a stroke and is preventable. On the other hand, patients with a PFO and being over age of 60 years should be considered within the unknown etiology of the stroke. So this is the end of a capsule summary of the four different sections. Definition and epidemiology of issues, addressing the seven possible etiologies, the controversy surrounding two trials, the Navigate issues and the Respect issues trials, and finally, as just commented on, directions of ongoing and future research on issues. This being said, let me now be in more detail on each of these sections. Let's begin with section number one, definition and epidemiology. 5 points to be made. Point number one, the term embolic stroke of undetermined source or issues was introduced in 2014 to describe patients with a non-lacunar ischemic stroke and no convincing etiology. Point number two, cryptogenic stroke is not synonymous of issues, but may be a first step in the investigation of issues when the diagnostic workup is not complete. Point number three, issues represents an etiologically heterogeneous group of patients in whom a stroke may be caused by various potential sources of thromboembolism, specifically seven: atrial fibrillation, atrial cardiopathy, ventricular disease, valvular heart disease, atherosclerotic plaques, patent foramen ovale, and cancer. Point number four, from an epidemiological point of view, issues represents a large patient group as it involves approximately 17% of all ischemic stroke patients, who are typically younger patients with mild strokes and with a stroke recurrence of about 4 to 5% per year. And point number five, the use of antiplatelet agents or the use of anticoagulants has become quite controversial, as we will address in section number three. So let's continue and focus our attention on section number 2, the 7 possible etiologies. For many years, silent or covert atrial fibrillation was conceived as perhaps the most important underlying mechanism of issues. Today, this has become questionable. Why? As observed in the FINE-AF study, the rate of atrial fibrillation detection during follow-up in issues is similar to other non-issues stroke patients. Second, as observed in the ASSER 2 trial, the rate of occurrence of subclinical atrial fibrillation lasting for at least 5 minutes or more is similar among all the patients with and without history of a stroke. Third, issues patients are phenotypically different compared with the stroke patients with atrial fibrillation, with the former being younger and with milder strokes. Such observations were made in the Navigate issues and in the Respect issues trials. And fourth, the majority of embolic events, stroke or systemic embolism, does not occur proximal to recent episodes of atrial tachycardia or atrial fibrillation. This is shown in patients with implantable cardiac monitoring devices in the ASSERT and TRENS studies. So in the context of silent or covert atrial fibrillation, this may constitute the main embolic source in specific issue subgroups like the elderly over age of 75 years, as shown in the RESPECT issues trial, when in a long term, dabigatran appeared to be superior to aspirin, this in the prevention of such strokes. So this, as atrial fibrillation being a possible etiology. What about the other 6 etiologies? Let's address one by one. First, atrial cardiopathy. While atrial fibrillation may be a manifestation of a diseased left atrium, a diseased left atrium, regardless of atrial fibrillation, may be the source of embolic phenomena, as shown in a number of recent studies, particularly in patients with cardiac monitoring devices. Possible etiology number 2. Left ventricular disease with a dilated chamber, poor contractility, and perhaps endothelial dysfunction. Indeed, a recent meta-analysis just published of randomized controlled trials of oral anticoagulation in patients with heart failure and sinus rhythm showed a large reduction in the risk of a stroke in anticoagulant-assigned patients compared with patients assigned to antiplatelets or placebo. However, the rate of mesha bleeding was not trivial. The next etiology is carotid atherosclerotic plaques. Indeed, in a number of studies in issues patients, ipsilateral carotid plaques with respect to the location of the stroke has been observed, but also the contrary in other studies of issues patients. The question here, if real, is whether the stroke in such atherosclerotic disease patients is related to thrombus or to calcium debris. And this leads to the possible next etiology, valvular heart disease. Actually, here we are talking about calcific aortic valve stenosis, patients with mitral annular calcification, or myxomatous valvulopathy. And here is the next etiology, patent foramen ovale. We are talking about the possible migration of an embolus from the right to the left atrium, and so to the systemic circulation. As mentioned in the summary, there is recent evidence, particularly in strokes affecting young people, that the presence of a patent foramen ovale should be strongly considered as a source, particularly in those with a left atrium aneurysm and a dynamic in terms of motion of the patent foramen structure. On the other hand, a patent foramen ovale observed in the elderly, in patients with a stroke, other etiologies might be considered, a site of the PFO, of course. Finally, patients with cancer, multiple pathophysiological mechanisms. Strokes are more common in patients with lung cancer. We may be talking about a hypercoagulable state. We may be talking about tumor embolism, mechanical compression of vessels, Maranting endocarditis, anemia, radiotherapy, or antineoplastic treatment, adverse effects, etc. So here's the end of the discussion of the seven possible etiologies. Important to address each of them in patients presenting with a stroke in unknown etiology. And here's section number 3. Two trials, the Navigate ISUS and the Respect ISUS trials. In the Navigate ISUS trial, rivaroxaban was compared with aspirin, this in about 7,000 patients with ISUS. In the Respect ISUS trial, dabigatran was compared with aspirin in over 5,000 patients. The results were unusual. The incidence of a stroke was similar in the four groups, although in the Respect ISUS study, after a year, there was a trend of benefit with dabigatran. But what was peculiar was major bleeding and intracranial hemorrhage. No real differences between the groups, except being lower in the aspirin group of the Navigate ISUS study. What are the explanations for such unusual observations? Most likely relate to the heterogeneity of etiologies, and that is possible that such thromboemboli were red, fibrin-dependent, others were white, platelet-dependent, and a third group related to calcification or calcium emboli. And how these three different types of emboli took place in the different four groups of patients, we don't have the answer, but the heterogeneity of the ISUS syndrome may explain the results being so odd. In fact, aspirin might have worked in some cases, where anticoagulants in the others, depending on different etiologies, and so the final results or observations being a puzzle. And this leads to the final section, section number 4, direction of ongoing and future research on ISUS. What should we do to provide more light in the diagnosis and understanding of ISUS, and so in its management? Three studies are under consideration. First, a highly powered COMPASS trial, that is, compare the combination of rivaroxaban and aspirin with aspirin alone, the objective being to prevent a stroke recurrence in patients with aortic arch, cervical, or intracranial atherosclerosis. Second, the axiomatic study, with the use of the new oral factor 11 inhibitors as compared with antiplatelet treatment, again for stroke prevention in patients with atherosclerotic disease. And finally, the Arcadia trial, focused in oral anticoagulation of patients with atrial cardiopathy or left ventricular disease. Aside of these three potential trials and other observational approaches, it seems that two concepts should be approached. The first concept is within each etiology of the seven that we mention, just to clarify when a red thrombus takes place with predominance of fibrin, such as in the stasis phenomena of left ventricular dilatation or atrial cardiopathy, versus when the clot or the thrombus is a white thrombus, platelet-dependent, as it may happen in atherosclerotic disease processes. And in addition, although not specified in this excellent review, our feeling and the feeling of many others is that in a good proportion of patients with issues, the process is calcium emboli, with no antithrombotic therapy being of help. So the first concept is to determine these three possibilities according to different etiologies. And here's the second concept. Which strokes are indeed undetermined, and which diagnostic workup is indeed proper? In terms of the first question, it seems that a stroke on a young individual under age of 60 who has a PFO should probably be excluded from the syndrome, since such etiology is not infrequently the source of a stroke and is preventable. On the other hand, patients with a PFO and being over age of 60 years should be considered within the unknown etiology of the stroke. And let's finish with the final statement of this interesting paper, and I quote, "The high prevalence of issues patients, the considerable stroke risk, the availability of sophisticated diagnostic modalities, the establishment of novel antithrombotic strategies like the combination of low-dose rivaroxaban and aspirin, and the development of novel classes of oral anticoagulants like the factor XIa inhibitors highlight issues as an important priority in stroke research in the coming years." Close quotes. Thank you.